Dick Hale, born in 1936, and Neil Walker in 1948, are both longtime members of Concord Rotary. They are being interviewed by Renee Garrillett for Concord's Oral History Program on July 6, 2005, at Neil Walker's home at 57 Woodland Road in Concord. Rotary International celebrates its 100th birthday this year, and Concord Rotary, formed in 1931, will be marking 75 years in the coming year. When did you join Rotary, and what attracted you to the organization?
Well, first of all, I've been associated with Dick Shoemaker, who was a Rotarian in Lexington, and also I've been to Rotary meetings in Lexington as a student. In Concord, we call that Student of the Month. And in the course of my paving business, I had occasion to do business with Cap Jenny, a well-known Concord builder. And at one point I asked Cap if I could join Rotary. Even though we don't like people to apply for Rotary, I was applying for Rotary because I didn't know any better at the time. And Cap said, well, why don't you wait about a year, I'll be president, and then I'll propose you or something or other. Actually, I never heard a word for a year.
And then what year did you actually join?
And I actually joined November 7th, 1963 was my induction date.
Well, you've certainly been in a long time.
That's right. That's 41 years coming up on 42.
So that you joined the Concord Rotary as your first
Rotary Club of Concord, mm-hmm. The first and only.
Great. And what about you, Neil?
Well, I came to Concord as postmaster in 1980, and my father was president of the Rotary Club of Boston. And he said it would be a great way to get to know the people in the community and put out some roots for the customer base that I had to serve. I had a similar experience in that the club liked you to be around for a year. So it was September of 1981 when I was actually invited to join by Tom Byron. And so I did, and I was very happy to do so.
At the time that each of you joined, where did Rotary meet?
We're meeting at Howard Johnson's, which is now Paparazzi.
That's where it was when I joined. Like a large room with a fireplace at the end of it. And, it was there for many years.
Right. It was owned by Bob Parks, whose son-in-law, Will Smith, was married to Carol Park Smith. And Will was a member of the club as well, and became an officer of the club, and eventually retired and sold the restaurant back to the company, the Howard Johnson's company, and therein led to our removing ourselves from the premises to another location.
Was that the inn?
No, we moved to the Elks, mm-hmm. for a few years, and then we eventually looked up. We had a big survey as to the possible places to meet in the town of Concord, and there aren't many. Church basements, every place you could think of. And eventually, in Dave Winstanley's term as president, we went to the Colonial Inn.
So that was in the 80s?
That was probably the late 80s, mm-hmm. 88 perhaps.
When you joined, certainly attendance was fanatical?
Well, let's just say after my first week in Rotary, if I missed a meeting, I got a postcard reminding me to make up before the next 7 days were up. And in those days, you had 7 days before and 7 days after to make up your meeting. Concord was well known for its high attendance. usually 97, 98, 99, sometimes even 100% meetings. We consistently led the district. And in subsequent years, that's been relaxed a little bit. The waiting period or the time period before and after a meeting now is 14 days. And so anybody that can't make all the meetings really isn't trying very hard. But we're not pressing people like we did. Things have changed, and people don't have the time they had before.
I remember when I was, the club invites a prospective member to what we call an information meeting. And I can remember attending that in Tom Byron's office. Jim Mercer was there, and a number of the people who have passed on now. And when they began to talk about a Thursday noon meeting, every Thursday, and they emphasized every Thursday, I sat there and I thought to myself, there is no way that I could be there every Thursday. But I sit here now, 23 years later, with 23 years of perfect attendance, and Dick is now 41 years. And what I tell prospective members now is that doesn't happen because it's an onerous, arduous task. It happens because Rotary becomes an event that you want to do, that you look forward to. In fact, over the years, when a meeting is proposed on a Thursday, I really weigh whether or not I really want to miss the Rotary meeting to do that. Sometimes I do, and as Dick says, you go and you make up. But it's been my experience that that attendance is the bedrock that really makes this club different from a lot of clubs. I think it's part of the reason we are so large. And it just flows that if you come to the meetings religiously or just often, you can't help but get involved in the activities of the club and the programs.
It's also important to support the meeting place. And that's become more important lately as attendance has been relaxed. And also attendance at committee meetings and functions outside the regular noon meeting count as a meeting. So some people may take that as the only meeting they're going to go to. We encourage them to go to the noon meeting if they can. We're not as fanatical about it. I am a little fanatical, but because I think it's so important. You're not involved unless you're at the meeting.
When was the Concord Rotary formed?
I believe it was in April of 1931.
And so you're going to be marking that 75th anniversary next year. But right now, the Rotary International is celebrating the centennial year.
That's right. Actually, it was February 23rd of 1905 when it was founded. And it was celebrated this year. Every club in the world was encouraged to have a meeting on the meeting day, or the actual founding day. And we did have a regional meeting of about 12 or 13 clubs on February 23rd of 05. And Concord had 66 of the 250 or 60 people present, so it was a great meeting.
How many Rotary chapters are there in the world? About?
I'd say there are about 33,000.
Mm-hmm. And I think you mentioned to me once that the Concord Rotary was the 2,802nd club that was formed.
Right.
And how is it governed, the structure?
Obviously there's an international president and board of directors, and then it's broken down into zones, and the zones are broken down into districts, and the districts are broken down into clubs. We have about 55 clubs in District 7910, which is our district. Lexington is 7930, and there are probably three or four districts in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, I would guess. Incidentally, two new clubs were just formed in Afghanistan. Just came out in the Rotarian last month.
That is incredible.
I always take the opportunity to point out that Concord is really an extraordinary Rotary Club. It's unheard of for a population of a place like Concord at 16 or 17,000 to have a Rotary Club that is pretty consistently around 80 members. And I think that that says a lot about the vitality of the club, about our retention of members, about this attendance thing I was talking about. And in this district that Dick mentioned, Concord is the second largest club of those 55 large clubs. And there are some much larger places in this district. The largest being Worcester. And Worcester is the only club that's larger than Concord, and it's not a whole lot bigger.
And its attendance has dropped from 200 and something to 100 and something. So you really have to keep focused on membership ever more than you ever thought of. You need to think about membership.
Now, the way membership breaks down, it's no longer that you try to have one person in each business category.
That's correct. That was the original concept of Paul Harris, who founded Rotary. And it was a good idea, and it still is, to represent all of the businesses, all of the locations in a given town or city. That gives strength to the club. It enables a club to represent a cross-section and also to work on projects and bring those resources to bear. What we have found over the years is that that flows almost naturally. We are a club of such a size in this community that we've always had a very good cross-section, and it hasn't been essential that be the first criteria. So we look more towards people who can give something back to the community, and are of that mind, have demonstrated that perhaps before they became a Rotarian. So those are the kinds of people that we're looking for, and secondarily we think about what they do. Although Rotary does have a requirement that these people be the principals of an organization, among the senior management, the owner of a business, people like that.
So it's still based on the classification system, to say the least. We just relaxed it so we can have five lawyers or three or four bankers. But what's another major factor that's occurred as trends have affected Rotary, as businesses have changed, as businesses have consolidated, we now have what I call rooted and transient members. A rooted member is a Jim Mercer, who's in the Middlesex Savings Bank for 40 years, or John Collins. They're both CEOs of that organization and members of our club. Now the bankers are branch managers, assistant vice presidents, loan officers, and they're here today, gone tomorrow. So we're not going to have a president of the club who's involved with the bank, more than likely. Mm. So we need to change our outlook. In looking for leaders, we've got to be paying attention to who are the people that are going to run the club. And a lot of clubs don't have the luxury that we have, where somebody might be in our club for 15 years before they're president. But we're not going to have people like that either. We're down to fewer years. But most clubs, if you're in September, you're president in June.
Well, what you say about mobility reflects society. And another change is probably younger people in terms of their lifestyle.
Yeah, that certainly impacted the club. I don't know what the mathematical mean age is of the club, but it's certainly older and has grown older in the 23 odd years that I've been a member. It's difficult to attract young members in their 20s, early 30s. I think family involvement and activities among their children take a large amount of their time, and their work certainly takes a large amount of their time. Well, Dick and I have never taken that as an excuse for somebody we thought would be a good Rotarian. A busy business person is a very typical Rotarian.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly Rotary has contributed quite a bit to the community. And why don't we discuss some of the major projects that have certainly changed the Concord landscape and provided a much-needed service.
Well, we've always been an active club. And when I first joined in 63, in November, we had a white elephant sale in December at the old Veterans Building. And we probably made $1,000. And probably the Rotarians put up three-quarters of that. Mm-hmm. That was one of the major activities at the time. But as far as community service, the first real deal was Monument Square in 1981. And that was, the money was raised during a downturn in the economy. As Cap Jenny says, you'll never raise that money. And we raised $100,000 in a bad time. And the McDowell Company, first of all, we were appointed by the town to undertake the renovation of the main island in Monument Square. And we didn't have to go get bids or go prevailing wage or any of that other nonsense. We were able to hire our own contractor and administer the job the way we wanted to. In fact, we had Cap Jenny administer the job so that he would keep him out of trouble. And he certainly did a great job of it. And in 3 weeks, we put down 30,000 bricks and had a dedication in November in the townhouse with a reception. And subsequent to that, we've had five other major projects, and which included Helipad 91, which was really a monster accomplishment in our estimation, because it was something the hospital had been trying to do since the early 70s, and had even set aside $50,000 for legal fees to try to battle the environmental restrictions. And through the fact that we had such a cross-section in the club, people like Henry Dane, who put a tremendous effort out to do all the legal maneuvering, meetings at night. We brought Glenn Smith into the club subsequently to that, but he and Glenn worked together, and we went to all these hearings, and we produced a helipad at Emerson at a cost of about $180,000. Monument Square was around $100,000. And then we had some other things after that. We had the Rideout Field House, which was about $60,000.
And what year was that?
And that would have been 1990, I guess. Losing track here. And in 98, we did the War Memorial, which was meaningful in another direction, where a bunch of people got together on 9 straight weekends working with the town celebrations committee to put a place that was really in a shabby state of affairs into a place of respect for the veterans.
That was a very, very poignant, the culmination of that project was a very poignant event in the history of Concord, I think. It's a day I'll long remember. There were hundreds of people in attendance at this war memorial location at the edge of Monument Square. And it was a very, very moving time, attended by many, many veterans who were residents of the town. I think we even had a flyover by an extraordinary aircraft.
F-18.
Many, many people subsequent to that. I think that helped raise Rotary's the town's awareness of Rotary in the town. It certainly helped us, and we took a lot of pride in doing that.
It changed the spirit of the town. There were probably more than 1,500 people in the street. And when that plane took off from Hanscom and Molly Bergen announced that the plane was going to fly over, you could hear the roar as it took off. And during taps, it flew from the Monument Street end down at about 1,000 feet, I think, and then made a big roar as it took off. And then during Stars and Stripes River, after the ceremony, it flew back from Lexington, the Lexington end, and wagged its wings. It was flown by a Concordian, Lieutenant John Underhill. I think his name was John anyway, and so he's a reserve lieutenant colonel. He flew it up from Andrews Air Force Base. In fact, my barber heard the thing land at Hanscom.
Oh, my.
Make such a racket. But it was a truly meaningful project, and one of the key statements that was made by a Vietnam veteran, and as anybody knows, that was the Vietnam veterans were not pleased at all with their reception or their situation. And a fellow named Greg Sullivan from Carlisle was heard to say, "I feel like we really belong now."
Yeah. I was there, and I concur. What a moving.
Yeah. There were a couple of other projects real quick. The Concord's 350th, we did Kenneth Dunn Square in 1985. And we did the skate park in 2003 and 2004. And our centennial project, which is yet to happen, is the display of the USS Concord Bell at Kenneth Dunn Square.
Just one observation. You did work with the town on the War Memorial in 1998, but towns have committees that can be, a hurdle to get through.
It's been a key part of all these Rotary projects that either there was a standing committee, or in the case of Monument Square, the selectmen formed a citizens committee to work with us. In the case of the War Memorial in 98, there was a standing committee, the Celebrations and Ceremonies Committee, and they were in a quandary as to how they were going to get this work done. They were charged with rejuvenating the existing World War II Memorial, which had been built in 1952. And they called me up one night and said, "Who built Monument Square?" And I said, "Well, Rotary did." And the next thing I said was, "No night meetings." And after a year of night meetings, and Tom Huckins was the treasurer, and we raised, $40,000-$50,000, and we have money in the bank right now for maintenance, and people keep putting money into the fund. And most recently, we just had a ever more meaningful ceremony where the name of Brian M. McPhillips was dedicated for the new plaque for Iraq. He was killed in Iraq on April 3rd of 03, and it might have been April 2nd. Anyway, it's in that time frame. And we had about 40 or 50 members of his family there, and a very meaningful ceremony.
Yes, I witnessed that as well. Just going back a bit, the 1998 hurdle was with the Historic Districts Commission. Did you want to?
I don't want to be doing all the talking, but we came in after it had already been approved by the HDC.
Mm-hmm.
And the plan was done by Cliff Prentice, whose brother is a captain in the fire department in Concord. Cliff is a veteran, Vietnam veteran. And that was fine. And so we took on the plan as it had been approved. As we get into it, there were a couple of things that just had to be changed. I think there was a bench that was in the way. And I felt the need for some cobblestones. And the HTC felt the need to leave it the way it was. And so we had a few confrontations, some big meetings, and finally we were forced to adopt serious action, and we put a warrant, an article on the town meeting warrant to have them eliminated. We really didn't want to eliminate them necessarily because they serve a great purpose as long as they are objective and exhibit consistency, which they weren't doing. And so we were able to negotiate our way out of that and their way out of it, and everything we did was approved, and that was the end of that. So we worked with the system pretty well.
You mentioned that when Rotary does a project, you don't have to go out for bids, and in a sense you can streamline much of the bureaucracy.
Yeah, I think that's been a major factor in some of our biggest projects. Well, in a related way, it was a major factor with the helipad, because the various regulatory agencies that had to be satisfied for that project was a daunting task for the hospital to undertake. And each year, those factors pulled it down on their priority list. They had only so many resources, so much time, and so more years went by than they would have liked. And Rotary came along, and as Dick mentioned, using the resources within the club, like somebody like Henry Day, who donated his services and guided the project through many of these agencies and permitting processes. That's one of the unique ways that Rotary gets things done. And then, as Dick also mentioned, when the club did Monument Square, which the way Monument Square looks today, I almost wish we had some before and after pictures around the square, because you would tend to take it for granted. But it was really rather well-worn patch in the center of town that you really wouldn't want to see. And the club transformed that into a very handsome town square that the town can be proud of. And it was able to use various resources within the club, within other Rotary clubs, and outside of the public bidding and permit, and, well, we have to get the permit, but the bidding process that a municipal effort would have to undertake. So Rotary is in a unique position to streamline things of that.
We had an interesting anecdote with the helipad. As the helipad was nearing completion, we were going to have a visit from the incoming president of Rotary International, Cliff Docterman. And at about 8 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday, I was waiting to hear from our incoming president, Al Quarterman, who was up at the president-elect training session where Cliff Docterman was presiding. And I won't tell you where his phone call came from, but Al called me on a mobile phone, and this is now 1990, so it's kind of ancient history with mobile phones. But he says he's coming. So I get on the phone, and I think got about 30 or 40 Rotarians down there at 10, 11 o'clock in the morning, whenever it was.
Yeah.
And the place was pretty well complete. And so Cliff Docterman showed up, and he went around and talked to all the Rotarians. My father was alive at the time. He took videos of the whole event. And Nancy Tenney was heard to say to Mr. Docterman, incoming President Docterman, "Well, what country are you from?" He said, "California." But it was, and the other interesting anecdote about, not anecdote, but the thrill, we'll call it, was when the helicopter landed the first time on a test run. And we ran all over town trying to get a video camera. Nowadays, you've got video cameras all over your car, perhaps. So we got one from Anderson Photo, and it was on a holiday. I think it was on the Patriots Day in the afternoon. And there was a nurse in charge of the hospital, a senior nurse. Well, I came running down the driveway. The helicopter had called me in my mobile phone. He was on the way from UMass Medical. The nurse grabbed the camera. I think I had two tape recorders on each side of the landing spot. And the helicopter came over the trees from the New England Beacon. What a sight to see that thing. We were testing to see if enough trees had been cut down. We had to cut down something like 100 trees in the floodplain. That was the big issue. Anyway, the helicopter came in, blowing dirt and dust all over the place, and landed, and that was quite a thrill to see that happen.
I remember just a few months after that, we had somebody come to the Rotary meeting whose daughter, I think, had been medevaced out. And that was, that's one of the great things about being involved in a Rotary Club is you undertake a project like this, and you accomplish it, and it's in place, and then you start to see the service that it pays. And that's quite gratifying. Dick mentioned the international president, Cliff Dockerman, and I think that's a good segue to talk about the international aspect of Rotary, because it's in our name, Rotary International. And Rotary is truly an international organization. Since the fall of the Iron Curtain, we are in 90% of the countries in the world. Dick knows the numbers perhaps better than I do.
It's impressive.
It is. But international service is one of the major thrusts of our club. And the most international of projects, the most effective of projects that Rotary International has undertaken is the eradication of polio and seven other childhood vaccine-preventable diseases in the world. And this club, in its initial push, raised $60,000 to contribute to that effort, which has gone on, and our fundraising has gone beyond that now, but that was the initial amount we raised. But that fundraising has now gone into the hundreds of millions of dollars. And we have been on the edge of eradicating polio in the world. There have been some setbacks, but Rotary and the World Health Organization and some other organizations of that type are continuing to pursue that, and we think that's on the horizon. But this club has contributed on a one-to-one basis through efforts such as we funded the building of wells in Haiti for agricultural purposes, such as provide decent drinking water for that population. We have built shelters, homes and shelters in Fiji. So we really do reach out and touch people around the world. Most recently, we have funded a woman's health clinic in Pakistan, and we have funded books in South America, school books in Guatemala. So,
and Dr. Henry.
Dr. Henry Sharing Foundation in Cambodia, where we just, I believe, provided a year's education in college for 11 ladies.
And to start their first year in
college.
And I, of course, we're talking about a third world country, but I'm just thrilled to think that we made it possible for these people to start their college careers.
And for a relatively small amount of money. And also at today's meeting, Jesse Weinstein is representing our club and going to Ecuador in a youth exchange and made a nice presentation to the club. And as I said to Herb Taylor next to me, I said, Herb, this is what it's all about.
It is, yeah. She is she's going to be a senior at Concord Carlisle High School. And instead of spending her year there, she will be in Ecuador.
Ecuador, and she'll be hosted by three families. And is quite excited about it.
She is.
And she also knows the pressure that's on her to be a good representative of this country, and to put a good foot forward and represent us carefully.
You have a number of Rotary Youth Leadership Awards.
Yeah, certainly do. We had a very active youth committee this year. RILA, which is the Rotary Youth Leadership Award conference that is held each year. We sent eight students, juniors, from CCHS, I believe they were all from CCHS, to this conference, which was held on the 27th to the 29th of June in Webster, Massachusetts, I believe. And what happens, these young people get together and they have specific programs, but what comes out of it is a tremendous strength of camaraderie. They come back and speak to the clubs, and they're so enthusiastic, all the friends they've made, and it's just a very meaningful Rotary Youth project. And then most recently, Neil, why don't you talk about the Class Act?
For a number of years, I know that our membership, we have four or five meetings during the year that are dedicated to the members bringing gripes and bringing ideas and weaknesses and strengths and things they like and things they'd like to see. And it was a recurring theme there that the club should be more involved with the youth of the town. And we kind of wrestled with that for some time. And then a core committee got together and took root on that within the past year. And Ann Trudeau, John Lombard, just to mention a few on that committee, really brought a great project to fruition, and they named it the Class Act. And essentially, it went to the high school, and it asked the people in charge over there, the principal, the teachers and coaches who were heads of all sorts of activities, literally all extracurricular activities at the school, to identify for us those outstanding students from each one of those activities. And we had a great gathering at the high school, and we had a barbecue, and we presented each one of those people with an award and a small gift. And it was another great coming together of the club and the community. And it really, you could just tell, it was a real electric feeling in that room. And you could tell that this is something that was going to become a tradition.
The connection was just really made.
We probably
That's
fed
beautiful.
250 people.
and their parents.
And the parents, yeah. And we had about 35 Rotarians. So we don't have to have our entire club show up at every single gathering. That's one of the beauties of having a large club. Everybody doesn't have to do everything. Some of us try to do everything, but I didn't do the 4th of July slush stand that just occurred. Already Phyllis has been president for 7 days, and she's had two events, a slush stand at the picnic in the park and a special Paul Harris presentation to Dick Spaulding.
And the Paul Harris type of presentations, what does that signify?
Well, of course, it's named after Paul Harris, the founder of Rotary. And the foundation of Rotary International is the arm by which Rotary accomplishes its good deeds in the world. And say what you will, when you come right down to it, it takes money to do that. So it was... The Paul Harris Fellowship was started to recognize significant contributions, $1,000 contribution, to that Rotary Foundation. And it's been kind of a tradition, certainly a tradition in this club, that it was something that you worked towards, that you would one day become in the club. That you become a sustaining member by $100 donations. Some people do it that way. Some people just make the whole contribution at once. But once you reach that $1,000 level, Rotary International recognizes you as Paul Harris Fellow for having made that contribution. Beyond that, it's become a nice tradition for Rotarians or Rotary clubs from time to time to make that contribution on behalf of somebody and make them a Paul Harris Fellow. And the latest one was was done this week. Sharon Spalding, a member of our club, designated her father to be a Paul Harris Fellow, and that was done in a ceremony at their office on Tuesday.
And at the recent installation on June 30th, we had two Paul Harris Fellows designated. One was done by the club to honor a member who's going to be leaving us, who's done a lot for the club. And another one was Dick Howe became a Paul Harris Fellow for the second time. And you can be a Paul Harris Fellow as many times as you want. Quite something.
Is there a creed that Rotary has?
Well, we have what is known as the four-way test, and a fellow named Herb Taylor actually composed that in 1937, I believe. And it says, is it the truth? Is it fair to all concerned? Will it build goodwill and better friendships? And will it be beneficial to all concerned? And we usually recite that when we're inducting somebody, as we did at the installation bank. We had a new member come in, and Neil handled the induction, and I talked a little bit about him, and then recited the four-way test, which is something that you hang on your wall, it's in a frame, and then you try to run your life by it.
How much does it cost to be a part of Rotary?
Very little, in my opinion. We have some dues that amount to about $125 a year. Some of it goes locally, some of it goes to the district, and some of it goes to Rotary International. It's a very modest sum. The largest expense, of course, is having lunch. Right now, I think we charge $16 for our meal at the inn. So that really represents the largest expense to a Rotarian joining the club, the meal charge.
One of the things we talk about in information meetings when we're invited prospective members to join is that Rotary is not a money club. We don't want them to be intimidated by the amount of money. If it costs about $1,000 a year for the dues and the meals, they don't really have to spend any more money. Of course, there are some evening functions, but the club subsidizes them, as they did the installation banquet, where the individuals were only charged the noon meal fee for something that probably cost $50 or $60, whatever it was. And that includes guests, spouses, and so on. So it's really a chance to have a good time on what's been earned.
But I think it's important to point out that the fundraising that the Rotary Club does, none of those funds are used for the benefit of members, including the payment of meals. Any subsidizing, as Dick referred to it, are from actual monies that the rest of the members pay in for various reasons during the course of the year. But whenever we go out to raise funds, all of that money goes to I don't think we've mentioned that for years we have paid for scholarships at the high school. Sometimes they have been awarded at the Minuteman Tech School in Lexington, with some of our students from Harvard attend as well.
And that's done through our nonprofit corporation known as the Concord Rotary Charitable Endowment, Inc. Rotary is not officially nonprofit. It's certainly not for-profit, but it's not an official. Most Rotary clubs are not nonprofit. Some have incorporated. We are not incorporated, but we have that little corporation that we hope will grow to a large sum. We hope it will accept a lot of memorial gifts and outright donations, and we hope the Rotarians who have had a good experience in Rotary will leave some money in their will to the Rotary Club of Concord.
Today you were mentioning about a working at the soup kitchen in Waltham.
Yes. Yeah. That's another. Dick mentioned that we don't want new members to be intimidated that that they'll be put upon to write a lot of checks for Rotary and donate money. And the Bristol Lodge is the name of the soup kitchen that we support in Waltham, and that's an alternative. You join this club, and there are many ways to contribute, and that's a great one. When Henry Dane was president, he looked about for such a venue to support, and he identified this one, and it's in the basement of a church in Waltham. And every other month, the club will go down there, and we'll have anywhere from 10 to 15 members show up for that. And at the previous week's meeting, Henry hands out cards with food purchase assignments on it, you know, a bag of potatoes or half a gallon of milk or something like that. That's another way for the members to participate. So that those are collected and dropped off at Henry's office, and then on Tuesdays afternoon, about 3 o'clock, the gang shows up down at this kitchen, and they start peeling the potatoes and soup to nuts. It begins, and we cook the meal, and we serve the meal, and we clean up afterwards. And that's a real hands-on, great way for retirement stuff.
And that's the weekly.
Every other month.
Oh, every other month.
Okay. Every other month, we do. The Rotary Club is responsible for that, that day.
We feed about 75 to 85 people as a general course. And one of the key things is it's not that much money, and possibly the club could afford to just foot the bill. But the idea is to have people participate. It's only probably $10 a piece, and not everybody has to take a card.
Sure. And there's something great about that. I mean, I've seen spouses and children going up the stairs at Henry's office to drop off those groceries, and it just gives you pause for thought with the things that we take for granted so much, and gives an opportunity to do things for people who are less fortunate.
Also, while you're doing good and having these civic contributions, collegiality.
Most definitely. I think there are two things that bring people to the meeting each week, and that is one of them, that you identify with this group of people. You participated in these programs at various levels throughout the year, and that's a real bond for people. And you sit around the table, and I make a point, and I think a lot of members do, of moving around the room. Some people, human nature being what it is, they're more comfortable staying in the same place. But I love to move from table to table, sit at a different place each week. And it keeps me in touch with people. I hear about things going on in town. I hear them reacting to things in town. And that's a great bonding thing. So that's what is always drawing me to the meeting each week. And then the other thing that I don't think we've touched upon, though, is the program that we do each meeting. So when you're on the way to the Rotary Club meeting, you know that you're going to meet in a fine place at the Colonial Inn, the center of town, the focal point of town. You're going to have a good meal among people that you enjoy, and there's going to be an interesting program. The programs are assigned a year in advance at the beginning of the year, and you know what date that you have to bring the speaker. And we charge the members to, and some will speak themselves, but we charge them to bring us something or someone you're passionate about, a great humanitarian effort being made, an accomplishment by an interesting person, or something that, a hobby even, that you yourself are passionate about. And so every week we have a very, very good, almost consistently excellent program. We had a great one today, Ray McCarthy, one of our older speakers, a distinguished and accomplished person, a scientist, and native of Philadelphia. And he spoke on the Declaration of Independence, something that every probably all of us kind of shrug and say, oh yeah, we know all about that. Well, he told me about a dozen things. I didn't know about it, and put it in a historical perspective, and it was a great book.
We also socially have evening events once in a while. We'll have a summer cookout at Jane Barrett's house, for instance. We go to the Newbury Court often for a Christmas party. And sometimes we have just a gathering. Last fall we had what we call the Fall Fling at Sharon Spaulding's office, catered by La Provence. And so we have those events as well as all this other social get-together.
Well, I certainly enjoy the spring pops every year.
Yeah, we're up to, I think this was year number 30, more or less.
And well, I think, if I may, yeah. I think Dick started to go there early in our conversation when he talked about the fundraiser at the Armory, and there was $1,000 made. Well, Dick and Joan Hale, over the years, have hatched and honed and produced a fabulous function that we look forward to each spring, and it's the Rotary Night of the Pops, and the Concord Band plays. And Dick has, and Joan have turned it into a social landmark in Concord, and a great fundraiser for the town. We have a program book, and we're supported by very many of the businesses in town, and that's the principal fundraiser. But it's also a great time for Rotarians and guests and friends and the general public to come together and enjoy a fine performance by a local group, a concert band, and at a great location, 51 Wall.
And there's been an undercurrent as projects get senioritis, get old, there's been a push to maybe do something else. And when you think about it, what better thing can you do than just make the Pops better? So we put a big effort in this year to kind of rejuvenate the Pops. And not that others hadn't done a good job, but you've really got to be passionate, and you've got to dig in hard and really work at it.
Yeah.
And we have a full house, 250 or 60 people, and Stars and Stripes Forever played at the last number of the Concord Band. It's a spirited evening, and it's a short evening, and a great chance to pay back your friends and neighbors for parties and other invitations. Just bring them to the Pops for a nominal fee. We include refreshments, and it's just a wonderful time.
Oh, it truly is. At meetings, you're not supposed to be talking about your business. And you want to elaborate on that?
As a matter of fact, we have a little something that we have some fun with, and it's called Fines. And you can actually get up and boast about something, a child's accomplishment at school or something of that nature, and you can pay a fine and you can get up and do a little boasting. But we also levy some fines from time to time, and that is if somebody's overheard talking about their business at the meeting, we might make note of that and fine them $1 or $2, and it's all done in good fun. But as we tell members at our information, at prospective members at the information meeting, is that people shouldn't and people don't join Rotary for the purpose of promoting and expanding their businesses. That's not the purpose of the Rotary Club. The Rotary Club is to serve the community, to serve the international community. But, as we've talked about, as this camaraderie takes place, and as you meet people from the whole cross-section of the town, it almost follows naturally that your business is certainly not hurt.
And wouldn't you rather do business with a Rotarian who lives by the four-way test than with going out in the street and just dealing with anybody that you don't know? It just stands to reason. As far as fining is concerned, in the olden days, fining used to be much nastier than it is today. We have mostly happy finds. Jack Madison was happy to be back from playing golf in Scotland and Canada after playing golf all winter in Arizona, and it cost him some money. And I think people got at him as it was. But anyway, I'm for nastier finds.
I have also been moved when someone who is a Rotarian dies and the way the club turns out.
Well, traditionally, we gather at the church or synagogue at 15 minutes before the time of the service. And then the Rotarians march in two by two, and usually the funeral director has set aside 40 or 50 seats, and we all march in together, including some spouses. And of course, we have Rotarians who may be the funeral director or participating in the service, as was the case recently when Bill Bott's service was held. We had two of our three pastors officiating, and it was a very moving service and very meaningful. And that was a typical Rotary situation when it came to funerals.
And invariably, the families make note of it. It means a great deal to them to see the members of this organization that the departed person was such a part of and identified with. They're very grateful.
Now, each of you have been a president. When were you president?
1978 and 79.
So it's a two-year term?
One-year
term. Okay.
We start in July 1st. And I was president in 93, 94.
I see.
And I would have been president the second year if I could have been.
Can you come back again?
Well, in other clubs, of necessity, people are president more than once. It's never happened in all my years. I don't think it's ever happened in our club. I know it hasn't happened in our club. It doesn't mean it couldn't happen.
In fact, there is an unwritten, well, a tradition, I guess, in our club that you actually go through chairs. You come on the board of directors, and then you become an assistant treasurer and a treasurer and a secretary and a president-elect, and then you become president. And that's about a seven-year process. And that's another strength of the club. It's that when, by the time a person gets to be president, they've experienced 7 years of performing these functions that are vital to the club, of getting to know how Rotary works with the district on an international basis, and also learning a lot about the members in the club. So it's a real strength that they bring to the board.
And we hope that Rotarians will be regular members for 6 or 7 years before that. I was inducted in 63 and was president in 77, so that was essentially almost 15 years. We're not going to enjoy that luxury as much because people are more transient. Even the rooted people are somewhat transient. Things are just so much different, so we have to be on the ball to keep that spread going. It's just too bad when somebody comes into a small club where they have just a handful of people that could be president, and they don't even get a year out of them, and they're not ready. And clubs do not get stronger that way.
Mm-hmm. But Dick and I worked together. As usual, Dick did most of the work this year, but we worked on membership. And from what Dick was just mentioning, about how you have more turnover and people are more transient this year, these days. So it really has to be a conscious effort for somebody in the club, and we undertook it particularly this year, to go out and find people who are going to make a contribution. And as we alluded to earlier, people don't apply. So that makes it a little more difficult, but at the same token, in my opinion, better, because we rely on our members to identify people who may be good candidates.
And preferably without letting them know that they're being considered. And that's important because in the event somebody is turned down, which is a great rarity, it's too bad if they know they're being considered. It creates a hornet's nest. So it's just always better to do it that way.
Talking about membership, let's go to women being admitted.
Yes. And when I started, when Dick started the club, it was a men's organization. That's the way it was. And I can remember early in my Rotary years, I was assigned to bring a speaker at a certain date. And I had come across a woman who was a local politician in her town. She was a lawyer in Concord. And she was involved with, at that time we still had a county government.
Mm-hmm.
And she was involved, intimately involved, in the effort to abolish that somewhat superfluous level of government that just seemed to consume a lot of tax dollars for no good reason. And I brought her to the meeting. And she gave a great talk on it and spoke on that effort and what the likelihood was that it would happen. And I can remember at the end of it saying to the club assembled at the time that I thought she was a great example of why there should be women in Rotary. And I just knew there were a few in the crowd that bristled at that remark. But finally, it was a few years later that Rotary International changed its charter and allowed Rotary clubs to begin to invite women.
And when was that about?
1988.
Mm-hmm. It might have been 87, but it's in that time frame.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you're right. 87 internationally, and it was in March of 88,
right,
that we had our first two women members. And that was Joan Hale and Grace McLaughlin. And in response to that, a couple of those people who I think I had bristled actually chose to leave the club in protest of that new development.
How many were there?
Two.
Two, okay.
Two out of maybe 80 at the time. And I think some of us chuckled over that and thought that we really weren't going to miss them all that much.
Well, one of them just was going to leave no matter what. And the other one said he just liked it the other way. So? That's his opinion. He probably can't make it into the 21st century for all we know. But a lot of clubs had difficulty with it, and they still do.
Mm-hmm.
There's still clubs that do not entertain applications openly from women, or not easily from women. Mm-hmm. And one club in particular, which is nearby, is a culprit in that regard. And I always remember going to Sanibel, where the membership grows from 50 to 150 in the summer. And Joni had just been inducted in March, and we went down there for a vacation. And they were introducing the visiting Rotarians. And so I got up and I said, "I'm Dick Hale from Concord." And he said, "Would you introduce your wife?" I said, "Well, she's a Rotarian." And they weren't accepting applications for women at the time. But most of those clubs have gotten over it. And even in Europe, where we thought they would be really tough, I think it's working pretty well.
Yeah. And it was a transition. There's no doubt about it. You know, a group of men. It's one atmosphere, and the next crowd is different. But when I stop and think about it, I think it quickly became a non-issue. And If I look at the membership today and think what we would lose if we plucked all the women out of this club and their contributions to the club and everything they do for us when we went out the door with them, it's just incomprehensible to think.
Unfortunately, we lost several of the good women members that we had over the years. just for various reasons, not because they didn't like Rotary, but for whatever reason, personal or otherwise, business, they didn't continue, and some of them would have made good presidents. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we haven't had as many women, really as many women presidents as I would have hoped, having started in 1988 with the first, but Jane Barrett was our first woman president.
And when was that?
About 2000, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And just today was the first meeting presided over by our second woman president, Phyllis Morrow. As I mentioned, Jane spent all those years on the board coming up to the offices, so it was 7 years or 6 years, and then she was president. And Phyllis has been on our board for a number of years going through the offices and has come up and now is president.
The key is that not everybody's going to be president. I like to think people should agree to be president or should want to be president if they're capable, but some people, it's just not their thing. Mm-hmm. And
so some women have chosen not to start through.
And a lot of men.
And a lot of them.
And I do consider it a non-issue, and we're looking for people that are qualified Rotarians, not if they're women or men or black or white or anything else.
Yeah.
You just received, and you were surprised by it, a very, very special, meaningful award.
Well, it definitely was a big surprise, and I won't go into a lot of detail, but it was given at the Insulation Banquet on Thursday the 30th, and I was very surprised to see one daughter show up, a second daughter from the Cape with five children, another daughter from Vermont, my son from Concord, a number of past district governors whom I hadn't invited or hadn't been invited, and the other thing that was very unusual was that there were many more seats set up than I had arranged for, and so I knew something was up, and the district governor was there and spoke very eloquently about different things, and this particular award apparently has been given once, as far as I know. I'd love to find out who it was given to in the district, and it's called a Life Achievement Award.
Very nice.
So it's really quite an honor, and I hope it sets an example for others who could do a lot of stuff in Rotary.
Once you begin to function in the offices of the club, you get exposed to the district, and it becomes quickly apparent that the Concord Club enjoys a very, very good and strong reputation at the district level. And two people from Concord over the years have established that reputation for us. And one was Tom Huckins, who did a fantastic job on the efforts for Rotary Foundation at the district level. And he was a financial powerhouse. And he for years was the spirit of the Concord Rotary Club. Was the godfather. And the second one is Dick Hare. Dick worked tirelessly, that's an understatement, for the Concord Rotary Club and likewise for the district. And this Life Achievement Award, there is nobody I can think of in this district that I have ever encountered who deserves that award.
Thank you. One other item we didn't touch on is the fact that this club is, we did talk about the fact that it's 75 years old, founded in 1931, and one of the charter members was Fred T. Boyd. And Fred was our only district governor, and I believe it was in 1936. And we also have what is known as Distinguished Service Awards for members from time to time. And the first one the club ever had was for Payson True, who was a contemporary of Fred Boyd. And Payson had a dry wit. He worked for the old Concord National Bank, which eventually became the the Harvard Trust and the Bay Bank and the Bank of Boston and the Fleet and now the Bank of America. And we had a distinguished service banquet, a luncheon for Payson, who was about 89 years old at the time. And he got up and made his little talk. And he just was so funny, but he talked about going down to Atlantic City for the 1936 International Convention with Fred T. Boyd in a 1936 Ford. So that was just a little anecdote about the district. In succeeding years, there's probably been a few people from our club who have been asked to be district governor, and it just hasn't worked out. It's an enormous commitment to Rotary. They now work as a triumvirate, where there's a district governor nominee and a district governor designate, and I even have, I think, a fourth person in line. And unfortunately, the district is reaching for people that are quite new, and it's...
It's a tremendous commitment. It's almost a full-time job for a year, and a lot of people just aren't in a position to devote that kind of time.
By the way, Fred T. Boyd was a realtor,
right.
Local realtor.
Yeah, Fred T. Boyd, mm-hmm. Real estate, and his wife, maybe his second wife, was Bob Lyon's sister, I believe, who was a local real estate person from Lexington and a Lexington Rotarian, and whose son was a Rotarian and whose daughter-in-law was a Rotarian for a while.
Wow.
But that's just a little background on that sort of thing. And hopefully, as I referred to those Distinguished Service Award banquets, people like Cap Jenny, Mort Seavey, Doc Elliott, John Forbes, Charlie D, Bob, I don't know if Bob McWald has been done or not, but if he hasn't, we need to. And we've had about a dozen Rotarians in the past who have received the accolades of the club for long terms of service for the club. So hopefully we'll be doing some more of that.
I hope you do. Thank you.